fact that she may have to live in one herself someday. But even though Tally has a heart stent and requires extra help to get around and perform daily tasks, she's not in a nursing home. Her residence appears much like others dotted across the countryside in rural Girard, and she lives there with three other elderly people. A caregiver is at the home 24/7. Tally says she gets to do the same things here she did when she was living alone.
Read and listen to TV and radio, and I have a kind of a piano thing, and write letters and get letters, and I have a nice room, real nice.
Tally briefly stayed in a conventional nursing home, but says it was hard to get around. Here, she says, it's easier.
I don't have far to walk. It's not far to the bathroom. It's not far to do my laundry. I do my laundry when I want to. And it's just ideal.
Jan Kane is the woman behind this home on 5 acres called Pleasantdale Place, named after the road that runs in front. She's sitting on the porch with her 89-year-old mother, Virginia Geese. Geese's brain has been affected by a stroke and 2 blood clots. It's a bright sunny day, and the porch is surrounded by plants, flowers, and hummingbirds that buzz around to feed her. Wind chimes hang from a tree in the front yard, and a cat drinks and eats from a couple of bowls on the porch. Kane says it became clear that her mother was not happy after moving from her own home in California to live with Kane and her husband. She was lonely when the two went to work during the day, so her mother was placed in a nursing home. And while there were activities to take part in and plenty of company, Kane says that wasn't a good fit either. Some of the major issues, Kane says, was the food that was being served and when.
There was this pattern of breakfast being served very early. Some people just weren't hungry that early in the morning. Mid-morning, there would be cakes and pies from local community organizations that they would have with coffee. Then you'd have lunch. Of course, nobody's hungry because they've already had the cakes and pies. Then in the afternoon before dinner, there would be another round of snacks, cakes and pies, ice cream, social, whatnot. So you'd have all that. And then the evening meal, well, we're not that hungry. We just ate all, you know, the cakes and pies. Then before you go to bed, well, I think we better have a snack.
Kane reasons that it is practices like these that can lead to common problems for the elderly, like diabetes and, in her mother's case, incontinence. Kane, who's an early childhood instructor at SIU Edwardsville, says here diet is a major concern, and it makes a huge difference in the well-being of the residents.
That's one of the things we do here is try to have sugar-free. You'd be surprised at the delicious array of things that you can have when you have that intention to start with. And then you also have the orchard, fresh fruits available through a large garden and homegrown things.
Kane lives just down the road where she raises chickens and grows fruit and vegetables. It makes it easy to come here and check on her mom. Residents eat lunch as she shows me around.
This bedroom has the windows that look out. We do have 2 residents that wanted to share the same room, so they don't like to be alone at night, so they each have each other to kind of talk to.
Is this a couple then, or?
No, my mom and her friend Teresa, that's my girlfriend's mom, so they both share this room. They wanted to be in together, and they kind of, you'll hear my mom sometimes at night, and she'll say, Teresa, are you there? Teresa say, yeah, you okay? Yeah, we're okay, okay, and they go back to sleep, so they really like that.
So if this is such a great alternative to institutionalized care like nursing homes, why aren't more people doing it? Kane says she's one of only 7 small assisted living situations like this in the state. Funding does not come through Medicare or Medicaid, though some residents here get assistance through state agencies. Pleasantdale Place must follow similar regulations to a nursing home. Nancy Nelson is with the Illinois chapter of the American Association of Retired Persons. She says there are numerous alternatives to nursing homes available throughout the state, everything from adult daycare to in-home care to assisted living facilities to retirement communities. But families must consider factors like cost and the amount of assistance needed to perform daily activities when choosing the right fit. Eventually, for some, the best option becomes institutionalized care, says Nelson.
You know, it might be the health problems, it might be memory and thinking problems, it might be, you know, usually it's 5 or 6 things that come together when the family get together and say, we can't do this any longer. And a lot of times it's that decision's made in a hospital when there's been a health incident.
As Nelson points out, for the elderly, there's a host of considerations that must be weighed when deciding on living situations. But she admits she doesn't know why more elderly people aren't choosing to live together in ways similar to the setup here at Pleasantdale Place.
It really hasn't picked up. I mean, sometimes you'll have people who, neighbors that might move in together after one of the spouse dies. A lot of times you'll have siblings living together. And you have those naturally occurring situations, but it's just not something where people open their homes and take in two or three people.
Longer life expectancies and an aging population mean families are having to make tough decisions on caring for the elderly. More facilities are being built to handle an increase in residents and offer various levels of care. For Jan Kane, being able to provide this place for her mother after her stroke is bittersweet.
Prior to that, her lifestyle was riding her bike to the ocean 7 miles every day. She had a little convertible sports car. She zoomed around the city of San Diego with no problems, and it was really a blessing to her family and all of her friends because of her energy and functionality at her age. Really amazing. So this came quite a blow to us that her life had changed so drastically.
But rather than dwell on that, Kane says she has made the most of the situation, and she's helping others along the way. I'm Rachel Otwell.
It's 12:46. After resisting for some time, Starbucks has agreed to pay corporate taxes in Britain. It was revealed earlier that it has paid no such taxes in the past 3 years. Vicki Barker reports.
The recent revelation that Starbucks has paid no British corporate tax in the past 3 years led to boycott threats here and some embarrassing publicity. And yesterday, Chris Engskov, the managing director of Starbucks UK, announced the company will now pay up to $32 million in 2013 and 2014.
We're going to do it whether we make a profit in the next 2 years. Our customers have been very clear that they expect that we can and will do something, and that's why we're taking action today.
But Starbucks isn't out of the PR woods yet. UK Uncut, a group that campaigns against corporate tax avoidance here, says the concession is not enough. It plans protests at Starbucks stores nationwide. And British lawmaker Stephen Williams says it should be the taxman, not Starbucks, determining the company's tax liability.
People have been joking that some of these multinationals seem to think that paying tax is voluntary. Well, Starbucks have just confirmed the joke, really.
No one has suggested Starbucks was breaking the law, but British firms complain that foreign competitors like Starbucks, Google, and Amazon are able to outsource their profits to countries with lower tax rates. Starbucks may have buckled, but Amazon and Google continue to insist they pay all the UK tax they're legally obliged to. For NPR News, I'm Vicki Barker in London.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House, providing housing and food service to University of Illinois students for 64 years. Hendrick House works to ensure a quiet environment for study and relaxation. More information is available at 365-8000 or at hendrickhouse.com.
Another hero makes the leap from the bookshelf to the multiplex.
Jack Reacher is a ghost. Served in the military police.
He's 6'5", at least in the novels, but he's played by not-so-tall Tom Cruise. Our movie critic Bob Mondello reassures us how short actors make fine movie heroes. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 7th of December, 2012. It's the anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, 1941. 2,400 Americans died when Japanese planes attacked the fleet in Hawaii. A day which shall live in infamy, said President Roosevelt in his speech to Congress, which declared war on Japan the following morning, and it was the beginning of World War II. It was 40 years ago today, Apollo 17 astronauts took a famous photograph of Earth known as the Blue Marble, because that's what the planet looked like, a blue marble floating against black velvet space. The sun was at the astronaut's back, and so the planet is lit up. You can distinctly see blue and white and brown and green. You can see a cyclone forming over the Indian Ocean. The picture became a symbol of the environmental movement of the 1970s, taken from 28,000 miles away from Earth. It was the last time that astronauts were on a lunar mission. Since then, no humans have gotten far enough away from Earth to take a photograph like it. It's the birthday of Willa Cather, born near Winchester, Virginia, 1873. When she was a little girl, family moved to their homestead in Nebraska near Red Cloud, and she gave up the woods and the hills and the meadows of Virginia for, she said, a country as bare as a piece of sheet iron. But she came to love Nebraska. She moved to New York City. She had a successful career as an editor of McClure's magazine, lived in a row house on Washington Square Park. After 10 years, quit the job so she could write full-time, and she wrote novels about the pioneer life of her childhood, O Pioneers and My Antonia and Death Comes for the Archbishop. And it's the birthday of Noam Chomsky, born in Philadelphia, 1928, the linguist who came out with the theory that there is an innate, instinctive impulse to language in the human brain, similar to flight in birds and swimming in fish. He wrote about it in his book Syntactic Structures, 1957. Here's a poem by Willa Cather on her birthday, a poem entitled L'Envoi. Where are the loves that we have loved before, when once we are alone and shut the door? No matter whose the arms that held me fast, the arms of darkness hold me at the last. No matter down what primrose path I tend, I kiss the lips of silence in the end. No matter on what heart I found delight, I come again unto the breast of night. No matter when or how love did befall, 'tis loneliness that loves me best of all. And in the end, she claims me, and I know that she will stay, though all the rest may go. No matter whose the eyes that I would keep near in the dark, 'tis in the eyes of sleep that I must look and look forevermore, when once I am alone and shut the door. L'Envoi, a poem by Willa Cather, from her collection April Twilights, published by Amerion House.